Hi there. My name is David Huff, and I welcome you to Startling Confessions of a Recovered Addict. In this podcast, we will meet people, men and women in recovery, sharing their stories of hope and transformation. So I thank you for joining us. Welcome, everybody, to Startling Confessions from a Recovered Addict. And in the first segment today, we have my friend Ed Tilton. Ed is currently Chief Operating Officer at a recovery center in Colorado called Begin Again Institute. And Ed is here to share his startling confession with us.
Thanks, David. You know, so first off, I was super excited that you were going to have me on the show. And I really started thinking about just what was my startling confession. And, you know, for me, my relationship with alcohol started, it really started to pick up when I went to college. There was always the occasional drink in high school, but nothing really kicked off until college. And, you know, for the 4 years plus of college, I mean, there was plenty of startling things that happened. But one of the things that stuck out with me the most was this illusion that alcohol gave me, that I needed it in order to be likable, to be social, to be a better dancer, to, you know, to be funny. And slowly it was just eroding my character. Mm. You know, there were these things where I had kind of always promised myself, if I ever did blank, I knew I wasn't on the right path. If I ever lied to my parents, if I ever stole money, if I ever, you know, got into a fight or hurt somebody. I wish I could tell you that the startling moment for me was really that I was starting to see my character erode, but that wasn't it. After graduating college, I moved out to Colorado and I really tried to, you know, change people, places and things and have all those people, places and things change me. And it didn't happen. And so I got married to my wife on 5/7/11. And my startling moment was on 5/8/12, when after one last poor decision, and an argument, she kicked me out. And that was the moment where my startling confession or my startling moment was really, there were a lot of people in my life that were involved because in my mind, they had to be. My mom and dad, they had to love me. My sister had to love me. You know, my family cared about me. But my wife was like the first person that ever chose to love me. Mm. And because of my relationship with alcohol and the eroded character that I'd become, she was choosing not to, and she really gave me the ultimatum of, this is not the person that I married. You're not the person that I want to spend my life with. Mm. So if this is what you have to offer, you can go offer it to somebody else. And so from that point forward, I started to really notice that I'd gone so far off the path of who I was and who I wanted to be and what I wanted to be remembered for, that I had to start asking for help for people around me to regain my character and my morals and values. So I started not only asking for help, but also the biggest one for me was accepting help.
Let me stop you just a second here. I want to make sure I got these dates right. Was this defining moment 1 year after you got married? It was so your anniversary was quite a good time for you, not so much for your wife.
Yes. That would
that's great. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, I wanted to have tacos, and tequila goes with tacos, and you know, I just realized, you know, afterwards, anytime I brought alcohol with me, I never had anything other than a selfish relationship with alcohol, mm-hmm. or alcohol only had a selfish relationship with me. Mm-hmm. You know, it only wanted to, you know, focus in on me. And so I would say and do things that were just completely isolating to other people around me. And I had no idea. Just because I was solely focused on, you know, my personal party. And, you know, the first year of marriage was a lot of just me telling my wife that things were going to change, telling people that I wasn't that person, making excuses for alcohol, and really just, you know, that 1 year was a really defining moment.
How did you make that change? What happened?
You know, for me, it was a God thing. I got a phone call from a family member who had asked me how I was doing, and I had lied to him. Like I'd become accustomed to, I said, everything's great. And there was something in me that said, like, this, you can't lie your way back into good graces, or you can't lie your way back to character. And so I started, you know, I said, things aren't good and here's what's going on. And I think that they were just so shocked that I was honest with them, because everybody was quite a ways away, that they offered me help and I accepted it. And, you know, I really was able to develop, this group of people around me that saw who I could be, and I started believing in that person. That's not to say that it happened overnight. That's not to say I don't still have those people in my life, because I do. You know, for me, being able to surround myself with people that see my best interest has always been one of the keys to my recovered success.
Well, and I know you and I have talked on a number of occasions about your belief and faith in the idea that connection is critical for recovery. And clearly it played a huge part in your own recovery, and sounds like it continues to do so. Mm-hmm. Tell me, one of the things that we like to do, and one of the things that we have noticed, is that those people who seem to stay on that path of recovery, who have a sustained recovery, have some kind of activity, daily plan, program that seems to be part of new and positive habits. What do you do that you could point to, one or two things maybe, that really help keep you moving in this direction?
So there's two things that come to mind. Number one is something that I do every night. It's a nightly review. And so because of the erosion of character that I alluded to or talked about, I really want to be present when it comes back. So, you know, being able to focus in on, you know, any kind of dishonesty, displaced anger, any kind of fear that is causing me or encouraging me to act in a manner that I don't want to be remembered for. And then also, you know, looking for where I can help others, you know, because it's important for me to remember that I didn't get here by myself. And so I'm not going to continue to keep going, you know, on a solo mission. So that's the first one. And, you know, I was relatively hesitant to start it, but it takes only about 5 minutes, in all honesty, to review my day. The second thing is noticing the little miracles that are around me, specific to my kids. There is, for me, I call them emotional snapshots. But for me, when I'm playing with my kids, it's really important that I put my phone away. You know, that I'm not distracted, and that I remember that, like, the only reason that my kids love me as much as they do, the way that they play with me, is because I'm not a threat to them. You know, they're not scared of me. And the reason for that is because I have my sobriety. If I was still, you know, being a knucklehead and just really, being this alter ego or this other person, my daughter, my son wouldn't want anything to do with me. They'd be filled with fear. And so those are some of the things that I hold on to, and I put down, you know, at the end of my nightly review, in terms of, like, you know, what miracles, what moments do I want to keep with me forever?
That is beautiful. So just so I'm clear, and the practice is kind of twofold. One is to review your day, kind of like a scorecard. How'd you do?
Yep.
And you look at specifically selfishness, fear, dishonesty. Did I show up or not? And specifically the other part, how do I show up for my children? Am I creating a safe environment? Am I present with them? Beautiful. I just had a conversation with my 32-year-old daughter where I opened the door to discuss what could we do to have a better relationship. And she let me know that I did not create a safe environment while I was sober and she was growing up. I am so impressed and excited for you and your children that is a real focus of your attention. How do I create a safe environment? That's beautiful, Ed. Well, Ed, I'm so glad we got the opportunity to sit down. You offer such a story of hope to our listeners. If Ed can do it, anyone can do it. And that's our message. That's why we're here, to let people know that there is a way out. There is hope. So thank you, Ed, for being part of our Startling Confessions. And I will take one of your suggestions and turn it into an activity for the second segment. So once we get it uploaded, come back and see what I did with that.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, thank you for hanging around for the second part of Startling Confessions. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea, the practice Ed had. He mentioned it specifically with his children, being present to him. He told me also that you make sure the phone shut off and to be there for them. And I thought, what a great practice to also be applied outside of the family, the children. And the idea would be, as we heard Ed say, that connection with other people is vital to recovery. And I love that idea. And so how do we connect? I mean, my tendency is to be, to hole up, especially if I get nervous or doubtful or afraid, then I just go lick my wounds. And it seems that that's not a very good response to selfishness is to be more selfish. And so this idea of connecting with other people, research has shown this is critical for happiness. In fact, I'm going to do a whole video on connections, but the idea that in connection, that people who are connected socially are happier people. There's a great study out of Harvard University that they started in 1938, and it's referenced a lot whenever you talk about social connections. But anyway, how do we make that social connection part of our daily life? And a practice, it's very, very simple. I used to have a friend, he's since passed on, but he called three people every day just to say hi. He didn't want anything. He just wanted to let them know he was thinking about them. I have been able to some extent to implement this, and I've redoubled my efforts just in the last couple of weeks to reach out to other people. Don't need anything, just want to call and let you know I'm thinking about you. And so the practice might be to make a commitment that every day I'll call one person just to check in, somebody that I care about, and let them know you're probably going to get their voicemail. And you can just say, I'm just calling to let you know I was thinking about you. I care about you. And I hope you have a beautiful day. And whether you leave a message or you get to talk to them directly, it's simple. You don't need anything from them. You're just letting them know that you're thinking about them and you care about them and you hope they have a beautiful day. So three parts. I'll call somebody every day, and when I reach them, I will let them know I'm thinking about you, I care about you, and I hope you have a beautiful day. And watch how that begins to foster connection around you. You feel better for having done it. They feel great because somebody who didn't need anything just wanted to let them know I care about you. So give that a try. Set your intention. I'll call one person every day. When I reach them or when I reach their recorder, I'll let them know I'm thinking about you, I care about you, and I hope you have a beautiful day. All right, so I hope you enjoy that and that it brings some happiness into your life.